Good morning, everybody. So welcome to the last day of TechEd Europe. So this is a session about developing hybrid applications with Bistock Server and Service Bus. How many of you are familiar with both Bistock Server and Service Bus? Okay. So some of them are new to one of these technologies. So hybrid means different things to different people. So in the context of this particular discussion, hybrid means connecting between Bistock Server and Service Bus. Not necessarily cloud and on-prem or cloud or different disparities and those kind of stuff. We are just talking purely in the context of Bistock plus Service Bus scenario only. And why and how we will use these, what are the scenarios that are new by the combination of these two technologies, and why, in my mind, I don't even see these as two technologies. It is just an additional set of patterns that show up. So feel free to interrupt me or ask any questions in between, because here we are not going through a series of demos. I got only two demos, two very, very high-level demos. So the idea is to understand more about the concepts and the scenarios in which we want to use, rather than showing you a bunch of different colorful demos. So the objectives here is Service Bus is an underlying technology that provides content-based routing and connectivity across firewalls. How does Service Bus do it? Is content-based routing, it does it through some technology called Topics, which is a variation on top of queues. So it provides a PubSub engine with wherein you can define the predicates. So we will see that. So where you can define the predicates and say, send all the messages that are greater than, that has a value of greater than $1,000 for a given element. So like, let's say you have a purchase order amount, and purchase order amount greater than $1,000, you need to route somewhere. So that is content-based routing. It knows what is there in this content, and you are explicitly specifying a promoter property and say, okay, send all these things greater than this to a destination endpoint. The destination endpoint also happens to be another Service Bus queue. So it is a queue manager. That means I have multiple queues within that. And when a message comes in, I can say I can keep, choose to keep it in the same queue or choose to send it to somewhere else. So if some of you are familiar with earlier queuing technologies, like let's say MSMQ, for instance, there you could do that with a label value. So but that was the only value on which you could route. But whereas in Service Bus, you can define a set of predicates based on what is there in the content rather than just a static value. In MSMQ, you had to define a static value that was in the label, and it could route it to another queue. And it is not just a forwarding, it's actually routing. So the difference between forwarding and routing is when I forward the message, you send the entire copy of the message to the downstream queue. But when you are routing, you could send the same copy to multiple downstream queues. And you can have multiple subscribers getting from that. So Service Bus provides that capability. And Bistock Server utilizes Service Bus Relay to expose business processes. We saw a quick demo of this in the Bistock Server session, where we exposed an orchestration as an endpoint, as a REST endpoint. And behind the scene, actually, it was using Service Bus Relay to expose that. So what Service Bus Relay allows you is it is giving you a connectivity across your firewall and not having to poke holes in your firewall. And Bistock Server leverages this functionality of Service Bus Relay to expose its business processes or LOB systems or any business rules and those kind of artifacts that Bistock Server has. It can expose it as a RESTful endpoint. This functionality is not new to Bistock, the ability to expose its artifacts as a web endpoint. What's new here is with the addition of Service Bus Relay, you can access it outside of your firewall. Earlier, you could access it inside your network, right? So it could expose itself as a WebCF endpoint. So your other applications inside of your enterprise could access it. But if you had to expose it outside, you had to put a proxy server or a reverse proxy or those kind of things and make it available to external applications. But now with Service Bus Relay, you don't have to do any of those things. So the relay allows you that across the firewall connectivity. Third one is you can implement a scalable store and forward scenario. This is where we'll be spending some time today, because this is a very powerful concept, especially useful in many of large-scale Bistock Server implementation. I will show you a demo of that, and we will see how using a queue enables that. Once again, this is not unique to service bus implementation. This is just an implementation I'm showing on top of service bus. You can use any queue for this. You could also do it with MSMQ. We are just showing it as an implementation on top of service bus. The last one is Bistrox Services leverages service bus relay to connect to on-prem systems. So here I'm not talking about Bistrox server. This is Bistrox Services running on the cloud. If it needs to access on-prem LOB systems, once again, it needs to go across firewall. So we have a local service called Bistrox Adapter Services, which is acting as your local proxy on-prem, connecting to the LOB system, exposing that endpoint across the firewall using service bus relay. So we will see a demo of both of them, that is ability to do store and forward and ability to do service bus relay. So this was something that we saw quickly yesterday. I want to do a quick recap and set the context on why is this important. Service bus is a foundational technology. It is not an end product by itself. It is more of it, you use it in the context of something else, right? So you can use service bus, think of it just like how we would use MSMQ, right? It is your system.messaging's implementation. So you're taking the capabilities that the platform is providing to do bare-bone messaging. So you can implement it as part of your workflow application, as part of your ASP.NET application, as part of your enterprise application, but it is something that the platform already provides. It's available as part of Windows Server, as well as part of Azure services. So you can write an application on-prem and expect it to behave the same way when you move it to the cloud. And you can implement the queues and topics, and relay is not relevant in case of a server, but queues and topics, and move the same thing to the cloud, and it behaves the same way because it's the same code base. So in that context, we are telling that there are so many of these messaging technologies available within integration stack. We should look at them all as a combination. It's not like one versus the other. It's a combination of all of these things. So it could be as simple WebCF messaging or as complex as Bistrox server messaging. Complexity in this case is based on how much of code that you need to read, that you would be writing, and how much of the capabilities that the platform is providing, right? So in case of if all I want to do was just receive from one end and sending it to another end, yes, you can do it through WebCF messaging, or you can do it with the MSMQ messaging, or you could do it with service bus relay or service bus messaging. And we need to understand whether is it a synchronous pattern or an asynchronous pattern. And we also need to understand, do I need to go across multiple security boundaries and firewall boundaries? And is there a need for message repair and resubmit? Those kind of things are the pivotal drivers for choosing one over the other or a combination of them. So here, let us look at what are the various Microsoft integration scenarios and what is it that we are focusing on today. If you look at the integration scenarios, it says most of the application integration today continues to happen on-prem because most of the LOB systems that we are talking about continue to live on-prem. Having said that, we are talking about enterprise integration, and we need to be able to integrate across enterprises also. So that means the LOB systems are still on-prem, and they will continue to be on-prem. We need to have an ability to connect between these systems and across these systems. Today, we will be focusing specifically on these aspects. That is, how do I harness the cloud for elastic compute and access external applications? So that is, instead of moving these applications to the cloud, is there a way that I can use the capabilities that are there on the cloud for my on-prem applications? I'm not moving these things out, because these LOB systems cannot move out, at least not in the near future. So how do I leverage the elasticity of the cloud without having to move my applications there, and leverage the cloud for scale and high availability and disaster recovery? So that's one other area that that's of significant interest, especially in with what the cloud offers, is high availability and disaster recovery. That means I should be able to store it in some location so that I can subscribe it at a later time and not have to worry about what if that storage goes down. So you should have a way of replicating it across geographically and still provide that kind of a high availability. And the other aspects that I want to touch base today, because we covered extensively on B2B the other day. So the other aspects that I want to touch about is the connect to a host of a SaaS service from your on-prem or a SaaS application. So that means the ability to expose your on-prem systems through the cloud, or connecting from an external cloud service like Windows services, Windows Bistro services, to on-prem LOB systems. And finally, we'll also look at store and forward solution. Any questions so far on this? All right. So before we delve further into this, let us look at a very important messaging pattern, which is our context for today's discussion, is synchronous and asynchronous messaging. Synchronous messaging is like a client is posting a request and is expecting a response, not just an acknowledgement. It is expecting a valid response. I posted, send me a list of orders that was posted last month. So the data set has to return me the current result set. So it is not just acknowledging the fact that, OK, I got your query. I'm going to get back to you in 2 days. Right? So that is the second pattern, asynchronous. You are asking me for a report of show me how many customers bought greater than $10,000 in the past 4 months. I say, OK, I'll get back to you in 2 days. That is asynchronous. Right? So if you are expecting that response today, that is synchronous. The second one is like, I can wait for your response at a later time. So both of these, like if you are most of you are familiar with Bistro Server, Bistro Server supports all of these capabilities. It does synchronous messaging. It does asynchronous messaging. It does content-based routing. It does message-based routing. It does event-based routing. It does all of those things. Those are all different messaging patterns. Depending on our specific requirement, we would want to say, should I be using synchronous versus asynchronous? How should I create my client? Like, do I have a what kind of protocol am I choosing? Like, let's say if I'm doing a HTTP request, the protocol natively has a timeout of, like, let's say 60 seconds. So if I cannot respond back in 60 seconds, HTTP session is going to die. So that means whatever business process that I'm doing behind the scene has to complete within that time. So if I had a complex business process behind the scene, which is going to make a message construction and do some transformation, talk to SAP server, do its business, and get back, that may not happen in 60 seconds when you're doing it at scale. Right? So if I'm doing a synchronous messaging, I need to make sure that whatever that I'm exposing downstream can respond back at that speed. Right? So if it is just receiving the order and sending you back an order ID, like let's say you posted a new order, I'm going to just send you back a token saying that, OK, your order number 1020, I received this. So I'm going to process the order downstream and send you back a status at a later time. So I still send you a synchronous response, but not necessarily the complete response. Right? So in this second pattern that we are seeing here, it is synchronously I'm receiving it, and I'm just sending back an acknowledgement. Right? And then I send an asynchronous message at a later time. Right? So these are two different patterns which will help us understand why store and forward is an important scenario. Any questions on this so far? OK. So now let us look at the capabilities of the platform and see how do I bring the two together in terms of my architectural choice. So the capabilities that Bistro Server provides, as we said, like it already has an idea of what the content is and how this content should be routed, who are my subscribers, what are the capabilities of those subscribers. Bistro Server already knows all those things. So I'll give you a scenario. I'm sending you a purchase order. That purchase order contains n number of attributes within that. One could be purchase order amount, and the other one could be purchase order type, and the other one could be who is creating this purchase order. The other one could be a date format. All of those things are different attributes within that purchase order. I have different downstream systems which says, OK, if the purchase order is greater than $1,000, it needs to go through an approval process. So I need to send it to somebody. If it is between $1,000 and $5,000, it needs to be processed by these additional business processes. So that means I'm taking that same message and sending it through different subsystems based on the content of that purchase order. Right? That is called content-based routing. The other one that BizTalk server can also do is called message-based routing, message type. So now you are giving me four different types of messages, not just the content. Type of message, one is a sales order, the other one is a purchase order, the third one is an invoice. So depending on the type of message, I need to send it to different subsystems, right? So that is message-type-based routing, which is the most common one that most of you would have used in BizTalk server. If you create a schema and publish it, it's going to create a new message type. So every subscription that you create based on that is a message type subscription. So that is one of its capabilities. That is how it does that publish subscribe. When a new message comes in, it identifies who is my subscriber based on what is my routing predicate. Is it a content-based routing? Is it a message type-based routing? Or is it just a filter-based routing? So it identifies that predicate, and the subscribers are created based on that. So it is a PubSub engine, which allows content-based routing also. And it allows dynamic predicates. Dynamic predicates as in I should be able to define a new value and create a new subscriber based on that value. New value as in I'm receiving messages from four or five different types of suppliers. And I want to subscribe to a message coming in from, like, let's say, a supplier called Sony. So if I'm a retailer and I'm dealing with like five different brands, I have Sony, Philips, and Apple, and four or five different vendors. If I add the sixth vendor there, I should be able to bring in a new subscriber to that and start subscribing. But I cannot modify an existing subscriber. There's two different ways. I can create a new one. That is, add a new one for an incoming flow. But can I modify something? Instead of Dell, can I change it to Sony and expect all downstream systems to behave on that? BizTalk server says no, because all of those downstream systems may be in the middle of doing something else. I cannot suddenly go and change it. So we can delete this and add something, or just continue to add something and choose not to publish to this. But once it is published, those subscribers you cannot change. Right? So that is how BizTalk server's implementation is. But there may be scenarios where you may want to go and change that predicate. Like, let's say whoever that vendor was is now out of business, but has been now taken over by somebody else. So can I retain everything else the way it is and just change that predicate? Right? So there may be scenarios where you want to do that. But that is a different implementation. Right? So BizTalk server's implementation says that no, once it is defined, you cannot go and modify that. You can choose to delete that, but you cannot modify that. Then there is BizTalk server also supports something called as pipelines and business processes. Pipelines, I think most of you might be familiar with this. It receives a message and it allows you to enhance that message and allows you to do some transformations on that and allows you to do some routing based on that transformation. That means it is acting on the, not just in terms of reading what's in that message, it is actually able to modify that message itself, right? So that's a very different scenario than when we say it's simple routing. I received a purchase order, I modified it into an invoice, and then I routed it, right? So right in the receive itself, I apply a transform. So the outbound of the transform is a completely different message than the one that I received. So I'm not routing what I received, right? So that's a basic differentiator between a simple router and something like BizTalk server, which can transform the message on the fly and then route it. It can transform it, and based on the transformation, it can figure out that this content is different, so I'm going to route it somewhere else. Right? So coming back to service bus side of it, it has three different, three basic artifacts. One is a queue, the second one is a topic, the third one is a relay. So the queue and topic are in the same family, and the relay is the second one. And then you also have notification, which I haven't listed there. So for the purpose of this discussion, let us understand between a queue and a topic and the differentiation of that. How many of you are aware of it? Okay, few. So if you were to look at, compare and contrast this with any other queue server, like let's say MSMQ for instance, it can receive a message and put it in a first-in, first-out stack. Right? It's a FIFO stack. And you can peek a message or you can read a message. Like, let's say I put in 10,000 items in a stack, I can peek a specific message and say, okay, I'm not going to receive that, I'm just going to see what's in there. And I can move on without actually pulling it out of the stack. you cannot pull a message completely from the in between. You are going to be first in, first out. So it's going to pull it from the, put it here. So it's going to pull it from the bottom of the stack, right? So messages get piled up on top of it. So now, as a queue manager, it supports all of the standard queue protocols that AMQP supports or service bus queuing protocol supports, message queuing protocol supports. So now, it allows you to encrypt a message. It allows you to set a time to live for a message. That means I posted some 1,000 messages, and I want to set an expiry on that. If so, no, if somebody has not consumed it by that time, you don't have to maintain that because it is blocking the other ones on top of it, right? So I can set a time to expiry, and I can also set a time to deliver. So all of those things are queue-specific attributes or properties that you can set. Within the queue, you can define if the message contains something, I need to be routing it through somewhere else. That is just a forwarding of that queue, right? But the second aspect of it, which is the topic, topic is just a endpoint for a bunch of downstream queues. So think of it like a collection of queues for which you have one endpoint at the top. So you are not posting directly to that individual queue. You are posting to the top top-level topic. And these individual queues are telling that, okay, what if the incoming message contains so-and-so attribute, send it to this storage called subscription queue, right? I can have any many number of such subscription queues, and you are just posting to one endpoint, right? So now let's say in our previous example where I had, where I was receiving from four different vendors as a retailer, I have one endpoint to give to every one of my vendors. So if you are Sony, if you are Hitachi, if you are Panasonic, if you are Apple, you just post your invoices to this one endpoint. So from that endpoint, I'm going to put it into four different queues or five different queues for based on who the, what the manufacturer's name is. So now all my invoices are sorted based on the manufacturer, right? So from there on, I can go to one level further and say, for this manufacturer, there's these various brands. Sony has this Bravia brand, it has some other brand. So based on individual brands, I want to go to the next level. So the message router in this case figured out what is that incoming message, and you have specified, as a developer, you have specified, I want this message to be routed based on this value, right? So then it routes it to our downstream system. I can go and change that value at any time. That means it is not a defined predicate. I can go and modify that predicate. Right? The difference between BizTalk server and service bus here, in BizTalk server I had defined it. I cannot go and modify it. I can go and delete it and create a new one. But here I had originally defined it as Dell, and now I want to change the Dell to HP. So all the downstream systems who were receiving from Dell, they were not receiving from Dell. They were receiving from that queue that contained Dell messages. Right? So now I changed that queue's name from Dell to HP, or the queue's predicate from Dell to HP. All HP messages are also going there. And all the downstream systems that we're reading from that queue can now read HP messages, right? So that's one differentiation between content-based routing implemented by service bus and same content-based routing implemented by BizTalk, right? Now let us see how we can take advantage of these two different patterns, right? Let me know if I'm going at the right level or if you want me to change it at the product depth or breadth or whatever it is. So is this the right level that you guys are expecting? Okay. And then the final artifact that we want to cover today about service bus is relay. Relay, as we talked about, is about making an endpoint on the cloud available that allows the incoming request to go through the firewall to a downstream system. So that means there should be a listener sitting somewhere downstream, whatever that listener be, right? There should be a listener sitting downstream that is posting back to relay, actually. It's not going from here to there. It's coming from down there. So that means on any firewall, you can do outbound calls. The inbound calls are the ones that are blocked, right? So if I have a WebCF service running on my enterprise, that WebCF service says that I'm going to have a relay sitting out there. That means I am going to be posting something. Right? I'm making an outbound call asking, hey, let me know if I have something. So when an external entity is posting to this relay, And this guy is asking for this. All that the relay is doing is connecting the two together. Right? So as far as your firewall is concerned, you made an outbound call and you got the response for that call. So that's how that relay is allowing you to go across the firewall. So there is no hidden magic or secret sauce behind that. So it is making it in a very legal way where it's actually making an outbound call and getting a response rather than making that as an inbound call. The inbound call is the one that firewall is allowing you to block or trying to block. So this is how it goes across the firewall rules. And that kind of opens up a lot of scenarios. So if you look at the combination of these two, it opens up a lot of scenarios. Bistrox server by design is meant to be a message broker. That means it is not meant to be used as a message store, right? It is a message broker and a business process manager. So it receives a message. I tend to take this example of a post office for explaining Bistrox server. A post office can handle many types of messages from anybody to anybody. Post office doesn't really care who is posting this message to whom, unless you are in a blacklisted thing. So it is going to take anything that you give, and it is going to deliver to whoever you are asking him to deliver. And it doesn't really care what's in that content either. But you can choose to tell the post office that this is a first-class mail, that and it needs to be handled in a fragile manner, and it needs to be delivered by this time. So you are choosing to tell when you are posting that message, you are choosing to tell what's in that message, how it should be handled, by when it should be handled, all of those things. Post office can choose to honor it, and it might say, hey, this is holiday season, it's my peak season, I cannot do it in 2 days, because there are so many things that are waiting. And there are lots of people who want to be done it in 2 days, so I cannot do it, or it's going to cost you more. Post office can choose to say that. Same way, Bistrox server also can choose to say, hey, there is an SLA that I'm going to try to manage for message delivery. You can tell me a message priority and all those stuff. I'll try to meet that most of the time. But if there are scenarios where I've been flooded already, I cannot do that because I have a common store. And it's only so many endpoints that I can reach at a time. Once again, coming back to this post office example, you can say, hey, I'm going to send you 100,000 messages, but the guy who is going to receive it at the other end is out of town for 2 months. You keep retrying. Post office says, no, that's not my job. I'm not going to keep retrying. I'm going to post him a voucher telling him that, okay, you come and pick it up whenever you are in town. Right? I'm not going to keep going to his door every day for just carrying 100,000 letters, right? So I need to have a way of telling that, okay, I can do a scheduled delivery at a later time and don't try until such time. So that guy has already told me he's out of town for 2 months, so I'm not going to try until such time. So all these things will be put in a locker, and I'll go back after 2 months and pick it up from there. So that is scheduled delivery. There again, you are not using post office as your storage house. You are using post office as a forwarding agent for you. Right? So the next scenario is, if you keep dumping messages on post office and not deliver at all, one fine day post office will choke. If everybody is just delivering messages to post office and not taking it out of it, one fine day post office will choke. It cannot scale. It doesn't have that kind of a storage mechanism. It is meant to receive messages here and send it out. Same things could happen with Bistrox server. Right? You are just posting messages on it, and the downstream system is down for the next 1 week. So everybody else will come to a screeching halt because you are just choking that one central system. Right? So if you have a need for store and forward, that means you know that your incoming orders will be coming in at a rapid rate throughout the day, but your downstream system, who is going to process those orders, are available only between 8 and 10 in the night. Let's say you are on a leased SAP system. So the lease says that your SAP system will be available only at 8 p.m. So the guys who are sending orders throughout the day, all that they are expecting is give me an acknowledgement of the order and I am on my way out, the original async message that we talked about. The web application can post its order and it can go out. So the SAP system will come at 8 in the evening and just process all these orders in 2 hours' time. So I want to be able to store all these messages as they come in and process it when my downstream system is available. So there is a need for this store and forward in certain scenarios. But using Bistrox server as a store and forward agent is not the right choice. Is it clear? So the scenarios that it lights up is store and forward, and connectivity across firewall boundaries and the ability to modify subscriptions. So the combination of these two gives you these new scenarios. Let's look at a store and forward scenario here. It's a relatively simplified scenario. What I have done in this particular case is I have kind of pushed Bistrox servers to its limits in terms of throttling. That is, it is already flooded with some n number of messages. So now if post office is full to its brim, it cannot take a new message anymore. Right? So if I try to push new messages, post office will say, so no, I have to clear up all these things, though come to me at a later time. Right? So now, if that client happens to be a HTTP client, I'm posting a real $100,000 order, and post office says, no, I cannot accept it. So as a business, I lost that order. All I wanted was like accept that order, put it in a queue, and process it at a later time. Right? Because Bistrox have already shut its mouth, shut its door saying that, no, I cannot accept. I have throttled on database size. Right? There is so much message, things that are piling up on me that I cannot process anymore until the downstream system comes alive. So that's the scenario that we are in. And let's see how do we go about So the spool is my central post office here. So there's nothing really fancy here. All you see is like SSMS and like a console application, that's all. Nothing really fancy. So I have loaded Bistrox server with some 62,000 messages. And that has hit the throttling limit of database size. So the scenario that I have here is one receive location and one send port. I have this one send port which is stopped currently. This send port is supposed to be just sending messages to SQL Server. That's all it is doing. The SQL Server is my downstream LOB system, which is supposed to be receiving these orders. So I have intentionally stopped that SQL send port. That means messages are piling up on Bistrox server now. And I have a specific receive location called as a HTTP receive location, wherein I'm receiving messages from HTTP and just binding it directly to a send port. So this is just an implementation detail here. So as I receive from HTTP, I need to be able to publish it. I can publish it in Bistrox server guarantees message delivery. So that means it cannot hold messages in transients. So if I'm receiving it from HTTP, I receive it only if I can publish it. If I cannot publish, I will not receive. Right? So that is how Bistrox guarantees message delivery. So that means if I cannot publish it, I'm going to tell this client right away saying that, no, I cannot receive this. So whoever who is trying to post it will get a HTTP response saying that the message was not delivered. Right? So the message is either at his end or it is safe in Bistrox's end. I will not receive something and then fail to publish. Right? At that point, message is kind of in a there's possibility of message loss. Right? Being a guaranteed messaging system, Bistrox says, no, I cannot publish because of a variety of reasons. So now I'm not going to receive. So let us see how Bistrox refuses to receive in this case. So I have a simple loadgen application which is trying to push messages. So if you look at this, all of these messages are the previous run is telling that I'm dropping this. I cannot publish. Oh, I'm sorry. Where am I? Here. So if I were to run this scenario again, it will try to publish messages, and my count will still be the same. It will not. I cannot go further beyond this because I'm not taking anything new. It is at 62.717. It will continue to be at this. So all of this post that is coming in, Bistrox is refusing to take that. Right? So this is irrespective of the protocol. So I'm just using HTTP as an example here because it's the easiest one to show. Because HTTP is expecting a response. I'm doing a request and I'm expecting a response. It's trying to do a synchronous post. So it's the easiest client to show, and it will fail immediately, saying that I cannot, I don't get a response, so I'm failing. So how do we solve this problem? I can go and start SQL Sendport now and make the problem go away, right? So that means my LOB system immediately kicked in and everything started working. But that's not the point. I cannot scale my LOB system beyond what it can do. Assume that this was a complex SAP system doing something, and I cannot just dynamically go and scale it. So here, if you look at it, the rate was zero. It could not send any one file, right? So it was trying to publish like some 1,000 requests. None of them went through. If I need to send this, the alternate way of doing that is I'm going to continue to send it to somebody who can receive and not have to worry about processing. In this case, Bistrack is trying to process that incoming message. It is not a dumb postman. It is receiving it and trying to do something with that and trying to send it to a downstream LOB system. So that is where it is trying to say, hey, I'm not a storehouse. I'm a message processor. If I cannot process that message, I'm not going to receive that message. So now I need to send it to a dumb storehouse who does not really care about what that message is. All I want him to do is just receive it. Right? That's a queue. Right? So while this guy is waiting on this, I can go back to another client, like let's say in this case, a service bus client. And if you look at the service bus client, I'm just telling him post messages. So this was the topic that I was posting to. So this could be a queue as well. I'm just telling that, okay, send messages of the same type of message, the one that HTTP was trying to post. Use the same type of message and send them to, send like, let's say, 1,000 copies of this message. I can send as many as I want here and just say, go ahead and send them. Service bus doesn't care, right? All it is doing is like, okay, service bus, this is a service bus client, right? It is posting to the queue. So the client does just keeps posting. All that service bus is doing is, okay, give me and just I'm going to put it in a queue. I'm not doing anything with that, right? Bistrack is continuing to be receiving from here, but once again, Bistrack is not receiving anything because the guy is in a throttle state, right? I still have this receive location for service bus enabled on Bistrack side, just like we had the HTTP receive location enabled. I still have the receive location for service bus also enabled. But if you look at it, my queue did not go up either. I'm still at 62717. But where did all those 1,000 messages go? They are sitting in the service bus queue, right? So what we have done is we have just decoupled the problem and saying, okay, instead of posting directly to the message processor, I'm posting to a storehouse in between. So now once SQL gets online, all these messages from service bus will get cleared up. Now let us see that if you go to Service Bus Explorer again, now that we are done sending these messages, you can see them sitting here in this queue. 999 messages are sitting there. So now I'm going to just go ahead and start my send port on SQL. Let's assume that Bistrack is now returning to its normal state. On send port. For a while, Bistrack will get crazy that it has so many messages to process, and it will start pushing out all those messages. And once it comes out of its throttled state, then it will start chucking in messages from the service bus queue. Right? So now I did not lose my order. So it will clear up the 62,000 plus messages, and it will come out of that state and start processing messages from the queue. So this is store and forward. And this is a very common scenario in any large integration scenarios. So whether we do it with service bus, or you do it with MQ series, or you do it with MSMQ, it doesn't matter. So here we are talking about that pattern called store and forward. So recently I had a very large customer, one of the largest customers, in healthcare in the US. we scaled out the system where, because their scenario was these are healthcare messages that are coming in continuously throughout the day from various hospitals, like 100 plus hospitals. I cannot afford to lose that message, no matter what. It's a healthcare message. I cannot afford to lose that message. And it needs to be routed immediately. So that was pretty much the requirement. And then there is a whole lot of downstream systems which have disparity in their processing rate, right? Some of them can process at a higher rate, because some of them can process at a different rate and those kind of stuff. But the goal was to receive those messages. The rate at which it is receiving is close to 30 million messages every single day, 24/7. You cannot stop that, right? And it need to be highly available. It need to be highly scalable. And you also need to have the ability to say, hey, some particular thing just went nuts today. There was, like, let's say, some disaster in some area where people started flooding into your hospital. So I need to be able to scale on demand at that level. This is beyond 30 million MSA, 30 million a day. I have four Bistock servers, right? So with four Bistock servers, you have downstream SQL system, you have downstream orchestrations, you have downstream SAP systems, there are a variety of them, Epic systems, Lawson systems, there are a variety of them. Each of them have their own ways and means of dealing with these messages. So the challenge was to be able to receive it at that rate and deliver it based on these independent individual downstream systems' abilities. The current implementation is based on MSMQ. We haven't even implemented service bus yet. So it is based on Bistock 2010 and MSMQ. But until we implemented this, we could not scale beyond 4 million messages, right? Because Bistock would choke. If I start sending at that rate, if the downstream system cannot do that, like we saw that, like Bistock stopped at 65,000 messages in this case, right? Because my backend SQL is really, really small. But if I had put a scaled out SQL system, it could go up to, like, let's say, a few hundred thousand messages instead of 60,000 messages. But definitely it cannot scale at million messages, right? But there is a need for receiving these million messages. So it was a simple MSMQ. Just we had about like four different queues in MSMQ and we were able to do that. But that means it was just a different messaging pattern. The how we implemented, the architecting part was different, that's all. Right? So we need to understand the capabilities of the underlying infrastructure and choose that architecture accordingly. So that's the overarching message here. So now if you want to go back and see here, so now Bistock started processing this, right? So from 717, it started receiving from your service bus, right? So it got out of its throttling state and started receiving from service bus. So this is a very simple example, right? So the idea was not to show a complex demo. It's a very, very simple scenario. So the next one is... the other day, we also covered about this one. Yep. Great question. So the question was about, like, in this case, Bistock was stopped. We had about 60,000 messages, and we came back and it started. And like, let's say if I had continued to pile up, like, let's say, a million messages on the queue, and when Bistock comes back, is it going to suck in all the only 1 million messages and throttle again? So the answer is, Bistock is in a pull mechanism here. And messages are not being pushed to Bistock, right? Bistock is receiving from there. I can receive at the rate that I can process, right? So it's independent of the storage. It could be FTP for all you care, right? So as long as I am pulling, I can throttle on receive. In this case, Bistock had throttled on database size, right? Somebody has pushed so many messages, and the engine was forced to throttle on database size. Once I throttle on database size, I'm going to stop everything else I'm doing, right? Because Bistock is very, very sensitive for message guarantee. So database size meaning like it could be number of rows or it could be the physical size of your database. It could be so many things. That means as long as the database is not responsive at the rate at which Bistock is expecting, Bistock thinks that I cannot receive these messages. Right? So database throttling is the worst scenario to be in Bistock. So that's why I chose this scenario. Right? For all other things, that's called rate-based throttling. Rate-based throttling is like my downstream system, SAP says that I can make only two connections. Right? I have about 100,000 messages to send, but I can do only two messages at a time. I'm throttling at two because that's what your rate is allowing. Same way, if I'm receiving from, let's say, HTTP, and my IIS server says that my inbound connection is only two, I'm happily sitting there because I'm going to receive only two threads at a time. Even though you may be pushing from 25 threads, my IIS is blocking and I'm going to receive only two at a time. So I'm throttled there. But somehow you have got all the messages in here. Like let's say you sent me a large FTP. The typical scenario is the EDI scenarios, where you receive only one message. But that one message, after coming into Bistock, it explodes into some thousands of messages. Once it comes out of the pipeline, it explodes itself into hundreds of messages. So as far as the database is concerned, it got 100,000 records. But the adapter says, no, I gave you only one message. Right? So it can continue to receive that one message at a time. So it is never going to throttle on that inbound. But database is exploding here. So then you run into database throttling. Right? So Bistock gives you a lot of these options where you can fine-tune these throttling settings and say, hey, turn off throttling for all you care. I can completely turn it off. That means don't throttle no matter what. Right? Even if you are receiving million messages, keep going at it. It will continue to do that also. At some point, somewhere something else will choke. But for now, I'm like in a racetrack. I need to go. It will do. So that's about those are the various capabilities, options that the engine is providing. But that was a great question, like, will I be flooded? As long as I'm polling, I will throttle on that first. Right? So because there could be multiple receive locations from where I'm receiving, if I don't throttle on this one guy, others will suffer. Right? So I'll throttle on this one so that others will continue to be receiving. So this one is another simple scenario. I think we covered it the other day, so I don't have to go through this. So all I have here is that same example that we spoke about. So I'm going to be sending a message, and based on the content of that message, if the manufacturer's name is Sony, you go to Sony. If the manufacturer's name is Philips, you go to Philips. So this is about content-based routing as a topic subscription within Service Bus. So I post something directly to Service Bus, and if the message is of type Sony, it goes to that. Like, I'll just show you a quick example here. So in this message that I posted, so this is my topic. I'm sending a message there. And that has a manufacturer type called Sony. Right? So this will be routed to that subscriber called Sony here. The Sony has that manufacturer called Sony. So if the manufacturer's name is something else, like let's say in this case, manufacturer's name is Philips, I want it to come to this queue. Right? So, but all of us are posting here. Depending on what the manufacturer's name is, it's going to go to different locations. Right? So let's see if we pulled out everything from Sony first. Refresh this. I still have another about 1,000 messages sitting there. How come? Okay. Really? Okay, let me send it to Dell. This guy has zero messages sitting. And I'll make sure that Bistock is not pulling out of it. I'm going to stop the receive location called Dell. So when something comes into Dell, we can go back to Service Bus and see that. Right? So now let me go here and post a message. And say instead of Sony, I want it to be right? So now let me go and send this message. So let's go back to the view. That one message that we sent came here, right? So I posted it to this location. The topic just said, I have this subscription, so go to this subscription. So this, how do we pull the message out of this? You are actually reading from the subscriber. You cannot read off the topic. You can post to a topic, but you read off the subscription that you have on this thing. So I can have multiple people reading from this. So this is a, if you look at that, while I dynamically changed that subscription from Sony to Dell or Dell to Sony or whatever, I could dynamically change the definition there. So that capability of service bus is called as brokered messages. If you come from a BizTalk background, this is exactly similar to promoter properties in BizTalk. So BizTalk harnessed brokered messages from service bus, and service bus harnessed promoter properties from BizTalk. So the implementation is exactly the same. So now we looked at, we did a quick look, I would say, both at topic and queues. The third one that I want to discuss about is relays. So for the context of these relays, I want to talk about it in the context of BizTalk services, because yesterday I think we saw that in the context of BizTalk server posting. For those of you who missed it, please, you can watch it over the video. But today we will see this in the context of the services. Why is it important? Is BizTalk services does it in two different entities. There is an entity called BizTalk Adapter Service running on-prem, which is exposing your on-prem LOB asset as a WCF endpoint. Right? So it, we will go through that architecture of BizTalk Adapter Service. So what we have here is a simple orders table, once again, which has got zero rows in this. And I have a bridge on BizTalk Adapter Service, wherein I'm receiving an incoming message and routing it to a SQL endpoint. Right? So the SQL endpoint is my on-prem endpoint. I'm receiving that incoming request over some HTTP post or an FTP post or whatever. So the deployed service bridge itself is running somewhere on the internet, on the cloud. So I need to come across the firewall into my network domain and access this SQL server to post that message. So how does it do that? Is once you install the SDK for BizTalk services, you get something called as BizTalk Adapter Service. If you look at this, it's a HTTP local host address. You see this? It's a local host address, and you can see that here. Inet.ngr. So this is the BizTalk Adapter Service that is running there. So this is running on your local IIS server. So everything that I define within my LOB systems, it is just going to create a new WCF endpoint here. Right? So this WCF endpoint, I can hit directly localhost and do that. But now the need is to get it from some external service. I can choose to expose this WCF endpoint directly on the relay. Right? So you can post to the relay and you can still get it here. The difference is, BizTalk is acting as not just a postman, but it is also doing this transformation and message normalization and protocol normalization as it goes. So when I'm, like let's say in this case, I have exposed it as a WCF service, I need to post a message that is conformant with the way that SQL is expecting. In this case, my LOB endpoint is SQL. SQL is expecting it like an insert into table, blah, 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 right? It is expecting it in that format, along with a SOAP action header and all those kind of stuff. Only then SQL knows what to do with that. Otherwise, if you just give it a regular XML file, it has no clue what it is. So I can post directly to the relay as a insert message, and SQL will do exactly the same thing. But Bistrock is, in this case, Bistrock services on top of it is, from the bridge, I'm receiving a web request, which may or may not be conformant to the way that SQL is expecting, right? So the bridge is normalizing that message by transforming it into a form that it makes sense to SQL, and adding the associated SOAP action headers that need to be executed. That means I could be sending an update message, I could be sending an insert message, I could be sending a delete message, I could be calling stored procedures. I can do a whole lot of stuff with my LOB system. So depending on what action I need to take on that, I need to specify that in the action header, because it is going in as a SOAP request along with the WebCF payload, right? So that is what that bridge is doing while posting that message. So here, if we go back to this, I receive this incoming request, and let's look at what the bridge is doing. It could be receiving this, one of these three types of messages. It could be receiving from a HTTP endpoint called purchase entry, or it could be receiving a sales order. Depending on what it is receiving, it is going to apply a transform order to SQL in this case. So it received a sales order, a purchase order, and it transformed it into a way that it makes sense to SQL, right? So the incoming message could be of different types. Bridge normalized it, not just at a message level, but it also normalizes at a protocol level, because now it knows that I'm going to talk to SQL. That protocol normalization is also happening because the incoming request came over HTTP or FTP or whatever. So it is now going to transform it into a way that it can communicate with SQL. So I have to pass it the credentials required for connecting to my LOB system. And if there is a batching associated with it, I need to honor that. If there is a transaction associated with it, I need to honor that. All of those things are taken care of by Bistrock and Bistrock Adapter Services. So let us see how this works. Had some nice animation for that. So the LOB at that end, LOB app, sorry for the confusion around the naming there. I didn't know what else to call that one. So I have an SAP system at one end, and at the far end, I have an application that is trying to access this LOB system. That's why I called it an LOB app. Think of it like your payslip application or a paystub application or one of those things, which is accessing your LOB system, so it is an application. So that application is on the cloud side of it. And on the on-prem side of it, I have my LOB system, which is the SAP system, and Bistrock Adapter Services. On the equivalent of this Bistrock Adapter Services on the cloud is Windows Azure Bistrock Services. And on the on-prem side of it, I'm using Visual Studio to define my pipeline. So the wetter that you see there is, we went through it multiple times. So let me repeat that again. It is validate, enrich, transform, enrich, and route. Right? So I'm going to receive an incoming message. I need to know what type of message it is. It was a purchase order or a sales order, what type of message it is. I can enrich that message. I can transform it. I can enrich it further if required, and I can route it. So I'm going to define that pipeline on my Visual Studio and deploy that to Windows Azure Bistrock Service on the cloud. And then I'm deploying my, let me go back here, deploy that wetter pipeline, and then go ahead and deploy that service bus relay, and then deploy the service on the adapter services side, right? So all these three artifacts got deployed once I defined that pipeline and the connectivity to SAP, right? So now, when the message flows from the LOB system, it comes to Bistrock Adapter Service, which in turn posted it to Service Bus Relay. Service Bus Relay redirected that request to Bistrock Adapter Service running on your local IIS, which in turn executed that request on your SAP system. Your SAP system returns that request, response, and it goes the same channel. Right? So now if I want to add another LOB system, everything else remains the same. I added another LOB system, and like in this particular case, I'm adding IBM AS400, so I need the capabilities of Bistrock server and HIS server, right, to connect to AS400 server. and that goes through the same route. I can access service bus relay and WAFs and my LOB system. So as far as my LOB application is concerned, it doesn't matter whether I'm hitting BizTalk server on the back end, or I'm hitting IBM AS400 server, or I'm hitting an SAP server, or good old SQL server. Right? So the flow still continues to be the same. This was a pretty good animation explaining how BizTalk Adapter Service works. Let us see how this works in action. So once I have installed the SDK, I see localhost here, and I see that out of the box I have some 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different type of adapters. I can choose to define a new endpoint for this adapter and say add whatever target that I want. So in this case, I'm connecting to my local SQL server. So this wizard is the same whether you are doing it on the server or you are doing it on the service. Irrespective of the transport or irrespective of the adapter, this wizard interface is the same. So now I can define what is my endpoint. So there are only... Oh, oops. Is that better now? OK. So let me just do that again. You can right-click here and say, define my target. So the goal is to be able to connect your LOB system and expose it in as simple as 3 steps. It only needs those 3 values, which is what is the source of your LOB system, what is it that you want to do on your LOB system, where do you want me to expose this LOB system. So it's a 1, 2, 3 click process. So now I need to define what is my LOB system. So my LOB system in this case is local SQL server, and instance is I don't have a license, so I'm going to use SQL Express, and my catalog is OrdersDB. And click next on this. So it is going to connect to my local SQL server instance and say on your OrdersDB, the artifacts that you have are of these types. SQL Server has these various different types of artifacts, and one of them could be tables or stored procedures or views or whatever. So in this case, we want to do an insert, so I'm going to choose a table. And I have only one table called orders, and I say, this is the table that I want to do. On this orders, there are so many things that you can do. What are the things that you can do on a table? The table that you can do is I can do a delete, insert, select, or an update, right? If I had chosen a stored procedure, and within that stored procedure I had exposed specific methods, I will see those methods here, right? So depending on the type of object that you choose, it gives you those various operations that are allowed on that. So in this case, I want to do an insert operation, so I can choose that insert. Or if I choose that entire table, it will show all of those things that I can do on the table, right? So then it says, OK, what is the credential that you want me to use while connecting to this system? Right, I can define some username and credentials. So let's say test, test, test. So this one, finally, it says, OK, where do you want me to expose this? This is actually creating an endpoint on your service bus relay. This is the one that is actually creating this relay. Right? So far, we are still on-prem. We have not done anything to tell IIS that this needs to come from a relay, right? So here I am defining where do you want me to create this relay. So to create a service bus relay, obviously I need a service bus namespace. And I already have one in this case. Or you can just say create new and define your namespace and credentials, and we'll go create that. So let me go select an existing one. And what is the specific path in which you want me to create this? I can create this as take it the Euro demo. So if you look at this URL here, it's giving you a HTTPS URL. You can actually post a request message of the SQL insert that it is expecting directly to this relay. Right? At this time, I'm still not using BizTalk adapter. I'm not using the BizTalk services, EAI pipeline, or any of those things. Right, I just went through a wizard on my local host, exposed something, and it's out there. Right, this is exactly the same wizard that Bistock server uses. I can go through a Dubsy of publishing wizard on Bistock server and does exactly the same thing. I can select an orchestration, I can select a schema, I can select a LOB endpoint, and it does the same thing, right? And I can choose to define specific operations that I want to expose also. Just like I chose to select insert or update or a specific operation on the data type, I can choose to select specific operations if I have a multiple operation in an orchestration. I can choose to select a specific operation, right? And it will just create a Dubsy of service and create a relay on the service bus relay, right? So if you want to see, hey, what happened behind the scene, and you just quickly go to service bus, on the relay, you see these various relays created. Right, under that namespace, it is creating the relay. So once I publish it from there, it will go ahead and create a relay here. So anybody can post to this relay. As long as the downstream system can accept that message, it will just go through that fine. Any questions on this so far? So because with this one functionality, we significantly elevated the capabilities of Bistock server, not only to publish messages or publish artifacts within its store, it can actually publish it to an external consumer. And that external entity doesn't have to worry about what type of systems that you have behind the scene. Like in that slide deck that we saw, I could be exposing an SAP system or I could be exposing an AS400 system, right? So the customer doesn't have to know. Like, let's say if I had a credit card validation system on AS400. Customer doesn't have to know that it's a COBOL system running on AS400, right? So he just says, validate my credit card and send it across. So Bistock will normalize that message, post it to adapter service. Adapter service will say, hey, this is an AS400 thing. I'm going to send it to that guy. He's going to process it. And I'm going to get back some COBOL response. That COBOL response will be normalized once again as a simple web response to the caller. So that caller would be just calling it as a regular web service and not have to worry about how it is implemented behind the scene. So this is how we are normalizing it. And the relay makes that connectivity possible, right? Earlier, to do that, it would have been hundreds of thousands of dollars worth equipment to put a proxy, a reverse proxy, and make sure that you have a secured connectivity and make sure that you can scale. So now the ability to scale is significantly high because the availability of that endpoint on the cloud is guaranteed, right? So the service bus relay that is out there, which is where all of your external clients are hitting, that relay endpoint's availability is guaranteed. You don't have to worry about how do I make sure that world.web, mycompany.com is highly available. That is relay's problem, right? So the service bus service takes care of making sure that relay is available. The only thing that you need to worry about is, like, once the request comes into the relay, it is going to redirect it back to your on-prem system. As long as your on-prem system is up, which in this case happens to be IIS server, your local IIS server, and SAP server, which is by nature it is supposed to be highly available, then your relay is highly available, right? If I did not have that relay capability, I would have to upfront a bunch of proxy servers and make sure that I have an NLB system and those kind of things to make sure that the request that comes in goes through a sticky session because it's a request response. I posted something to SAP, I'm going to get a response in that same channel. Right? I cannot move it out. So once you put a sticky session on top of your NLB, your ability to scale has significantly come down. Right? So that's the advantage of the relay. The relay takes care of ensuring that the channel is still available, the request response channel is still available. It keeps it alive. Right? So now I can take any complex business process that Bistock exposes and make it available as a REST endpoint or a WebCF endpoint or a HTTP endpoint or a NetTCP binding or a relay binding, whatever we name it. Right? So Bistock adapter service, Bistock service on the cloud significantly takes advantage of this. Right? So if I want to connect to any on-prem system, it just says, okay, I'll go through the relay and do it. So to sum it up, what are the capabilities that we saw today was I have a set of functionalities that Bistock server provides, a set of functionalities that service bus provides out of the box, both on-prem and on Azure. Bistock service on cloud, Bistock server on-prem. There is service bus on-prem and service bus on cloud. So the set of functionalities that you're talking about is pretty much available on any form factor. So the functionalities that service bus plus Bistroc brings to the table is about one major advantage is store and forward. Another one is about dynamic content-based routing. That means where I can change that predicate. And the third and more important one is relay, right? So Bistroc out of the box provides adapter for service bus, so where you can publish, where you can consume and publish messages directly into the queue. And as we also saw, it natively takes advantage of the relay also. So any questions on this so far? Great. Have a great day. So completed pretty fast. Thank you.